Hello, everyone. Let me start by saying we appreciate you taking the time to join us today. So I'm Edward Morales, the client partner at Cinzi. I will be moderating today's panel discussion on innovation in the delivery of patient care. So today's virtual event is being recorded, and the recording will be sent to everyone in the coming days. So, and for those who've joined us live today, thank you. Just a note that all participants are in fact muted. So if you do have a question, please use the Q&A tool in this webinar, and we'll respond to the questions at the end of this session, okay? So we are extremely excited to have our esteemed panelists take the time to be with us to share their insights today, as they do bring a wealth of experience and knowledge as thought leaders in innovation and care delivery. So joining us today, I'll just go one by one here, starting with Jason Peoples, Director of Technology and Innovation at Mary Freebed Rehabilitation Hospital, and Lindy Thomas, Chief Operating Officer at Sac City Partners, and then our very own Mark Knudsen, Chief Experience Officer at Cinzi. So with that, I'm gonna go ahead and turn it over for some brief introductions and have our panelists share more about their roles and respective organizations to get us started. So followed by, of course, today's topics relating to innovation in the delivery of patient care, okay? So Jason, we'll turn it over to you first and tell us more about Mary Freebed.
Hi, good morning and good afternoon, everyone. So I've been at Mary Freebed for, this will be my fifth year in June of 2021 that I've been at Mary Freebed. I've been in healthcare since 2009 and really have been spending all my time in healthcare in the telehealth space and really looking at with innovations and what can be done with emerging technologies. So when I joined Mary Freebed transitioning from acute care, I really had some heartstrings that were pulled that drove me to Mary Freebed in the post-acute continuum. So at Mary Freebed, our mission is simply restoring hope and freedom through rehabilitation. Our vision is to be the national leader in high-value rehabilitation and post-acute care and develop an integrated system of care. So we have a lot of patients that come to Mary Freebed from acute care. So think about those people who have been through a traumatic event, that have been through the ED, they've been through an ICU, and then they simply need rehabilitative care. So our length of stay in our hospital can be up to 14 days or even longer. So we have a relationship with our patients, and it's really taking that person that is where they are today and transitioning them to that next normal. And I think that if anything, that really the pandemic's really put that into a new spotlight with thinking about, okay, what was normal then and is not normal today, and what's going to be that next normal. So at Mary Freebed, we have a vast network of acute care partners we work with. We have a footprint in Michigan as well as crossing over state lines in Indiana. We have over 110 specialized medical and sports rehab programs. We also in our network manage 351 inpatient beds with a lot of outpatient operations, again, peppered throughout Michigan and across state lines. So that's just a little bit about Mary Freebed.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. We appreciate that. So with that, let's go ahead and shift over to Sac City Partners. So tell us a little bit about Sac City Partners, Lindy.
Sure. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon for those on the East Coast. My name is Lindy Thomas. I'm with Sac City Partners. I oversee delivery excellence here as well as our employee engagement and client engagement. We are an industry leading management and digital consulting firm with a combination of we have knowledge in our industries as well as the tech expertise needed to find the right solutions for our clients. We were founded in 2011. So if you count that up, we're on our 10 year anniversary here. We're excited to celebrate that all year long. We just had our 10 year birthday and all throughout the year, we're gonna be celebrating with our clients and employees several events. So we're really excited to cross that milestone. We serve clients in healthcare, commercial real estate, financial services, as well as other digital opportunities that we see come to fruition. We really leverage our technology and data strategy to help healthcare clients improve outcomes, drive consumers to the right level of healthcare, and of course, reduce waste and efficiencies and drive performance, which all of us want that are on this call.
Yep, absolutely. So fantastic. Thank you, Lindy.
Thank you.
Mark, please share more with us about Cinzi and your role within the organization.
Sure. So appreciate Lindy and Jason joining us today. I'm Mark Knutson, Chief Experience Officer at Cinzi, responsible for our client services organization. So basically working with you all to make sure that you're getting the most value out of Cinzi and our technology. For those who don't know, Cinzi is a software company. We offer a secure communication platform specifically targeted at the post-acute market. We're really trying to help people be able to provide care more efficiently across distance. So using consumer-based devices, a user experience that should look very familiar to your everyday communication experience, and really trying to enable our clients to deliver care to their patients, wherever those patients may be, in their homes, in potentially nursing facilities and so forth, and really make sure that they can get their questions answered in a timely manner, care delivered appropriately, and hopefully at a experience that is more convenient and more effective ultimately for everybody.
Great. Thank you, Mark. So with that, I appreciate the introductions. With that, let's go ahead and shift over to today's topics on, of course, the innovation and delivery of patient care. So starting at the top there, you know, headlining, you know, the public health emergency. So Jason, we'll go to you first. Now, if you were to describe, obviously, some of the shift that you've seen is brought about by the public health emergency in the last, you know, year. How would you best describe the delivery and kind of as brought about by the onset of public health emergency and what has changed?
So from my perspective, I've been in the telehealth space for a number of years, and it's always been an uphill battle. You know, really carrying water uphill. Unfortunately, it took the pandemic to really catapult virtual care as mainstream healthcare delivery, simply because we had to. We had patients that we needed to continue treatment with. There is this sense of panic. People don't know with what brings tomorrow. So what can we do to provide some reassurance, continue that treatment, whether that is through a therapy service? We have a robust psychology department that really flipped the switch and were able to go virtual 100% overnight, essentially, when the public health emergency was announced. So that was an organizational decision that Mary Freebed made. So, you know, when I look at with historically what the CMS guidelines are and how, you know, who is outlined to be a distant site practitioner, who, where the person can be at time of service. A lot of those models were really old. So we look at, you know, a patient, a person being in a brick and mortar building, just to have CMS reimburse and recognize those services. Well, in the age of consumerism and everybody wants everything on demand, why wouldn't we be able to deliver care in a non-traditional way? Does everybody need to come in person for these visits? Can we effectively demonstrate that telehealth is not only here to stay, but it's something that's compelling that we actually can really change the way that the expectations are and blending that with the consumer expectations and those experiences? Okay, so I've got a phone. It's my most personal device that I have with me. Well, can I receive care on that phone? Well, historically, healthcare has not really been willing to bend to that. And I think that that's something that really the pandemic really shined a spotlight on, being able to say, yeah, access to any person anywhere on any internet-enabled device. A lot of those CMS restrictions have been rescinded that really, you know, prevented us from providing, you know, in a traditional sense, the billing and the reimbursement behind those services. So we're really anxious to see what the future will bring based on with where people are today. What are those expectations? We're in an on-demand environment and have been for quite some time. We've been in the pandemic for over a year. There's this yearning to go back to how things were. I don't know if we're ever going to get back to the way that things were before March 15th of 2020. What does that look like today? What is that next normal? And I think that when I look at post-acute care, we're really taking that person and transitioning them to the next normal anyway. So the awareness is huge with this, and just knowing that not only can we deliver care through a mobile device to a person anytime, any place, anywhere, but think about that from the patient perspective, the consumer. What are your expectations? Do you expect to be able to have an on-demand visit on your mobile device whenever you want it? Is healthcare willing to do that? So I think that that's where the technology is here today. I don't think that there's any question about that. I think it's really, you know, what the systems are, embracing that and really pushing people to do things differently in the spirit of what this next normal is. you know, from a payer perspective, we have bundled payments, we have value-based care, we also have fee-for-service in that older model. So as we transition more to that value-based care, those bundled payments, that we can start thinking as healthcare systems, how we want to deliver care differently. What are the efficiencies that we can create? Does every person need to come into your healthcare facility, or do you develop a hybrid model? Who do I need to see in person? Who can I see remotely? How do we develop those touch points, those meaningful interactions as the relationship builds to really articulate the value of the care that we're providing? So I think that that's really probably the biggest takeaway for me is the spotlight of, all right, where things were is not where they are today and certainly not where they're going. Technology is not the limiting factor here. It's how the healthcare systems and the regulations embrace where we are now and really open up the floodgates in the spirit of the technology is here. Are we going back or are we moving forward?
Yeah, and thank you, Jason. When you say opening up the floodgates, it prompts me to really turn it over to Lindy, which is thinking about the delicate balance of deployment, right? It's one thing to say open the floodgates and have an adoption, but being efficient about that type of adoption and really being systematic about the approach in implementing, not too much too soon, et cetera. So given that you don't think, we'll ever shift back to where we were before March of last year of 2020, Lindy, kind of walk us through what that delicate balance is and how you assess and going in and really looking at making longstanding changes and not going too far too quickly.
Thank you. Completely agree with everything that Jason said. I think from taking the correct steps, it's really, of course, following guidelines, but more importantly, really listening to consumers, patients, and providers. Right, and how they want to, from a patient consumer perspective, how they want to access care, right? Do they want to, communicate via, their Alexa, online, whatever the case may be, to determine the right level of care for their needs, right? And more of those types of technologies are immersing through the pandemic. The other piece, I think, really with our providers, we've seen the adoption, and I know where kind of Jason was going, him being in healthcare technology, right? The adoption of healthcare providers to technologies over the last 12 months is incredible. It has more than catapulted. I mean, it is night and day to me. Prior to and working with many of those technology companies in my past. And so, to also see that, healthcare providers, healthcare institutions are now opening up to these technologies, ensuring that they have the right level of security, they're providing the right outcomes, driving behaviors of the patients as well as consumers. I think that. We're seeing definitely a difference in healthcare that we know administrators have been looking for, now getting that adoption a little bit easier.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So given that, Mark, talk to us about some of what you've seen by way of even some of the, large enterprise organizations and the adoption and what you've seen kind of as a shift throughout the past 12 months in that delivery of patient care and the willingness, as Lindy said, for the providers to now want to stop and say, now is the time.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, both from kind of Jason's point as well as Lindy's, we see, the pressure that everybody's been put under, as well as the opportunity that comes with that pressure. So I think as we look kind of across the Cinzi client base, the folks that are really successful are the ones who've embraced that pressure and are really pushing forward the opportunity. And I think we're all sitting here on this video call. We've all got our different backgrounds, wherever we may be. So the whole concept of communication and how we interact with each other, the technology has been normalized, and it's been normalized in our everyday life. And I think as the average person says, well, I'm going to get something delivered to my house, so I don't necessarily have to go out and go into the store. I'm already used to, you know, getting information online, ordering online. Now it's actually my everyday experience as opposed to what I don't have time to run out to the store. I think you take that consumer perspective and really, you know, an individual doesn't say, well, you know, for healthcare, I'm going to go back and do it the old way. They look at healthcare as another service that's being provided to them. Obviously, it's a very personal service, a very personal experience, but it's still a service that an individual is purchasing from a provider. And so I think this normalization of communication across alternate channels, convenience, making sure that I'm understood and my needs are getting met in a timely manner. I'm not going to go queue up unless I have to somewhere. I think all of that is the new normal. And it's this pressure that we've had. But again, circling back, it creates this opportunity. And I think the good news is because doctors are people, nurses are people, patients are people. We're all people. We're all in this together. We've all been going through this experience that we're collectively used to this new way of communicating and interacting. And so being able to pull that forward into how care is delivered, I think as a supplement or a complement, not a replacement, I think has a ton of opportunity and benefit for everyone.
Yeah, and speaking of the benefits to everyone, which is thinking about, you know, both from a patient and a provider perspective and looking at the benefits, right? Yes, there have been shifts. Yes, we're not going back. Jason, Lindy, 100% agree, we're not going backwards at this point. Given that, with the, you know, onset and the adoption being what it is now, there are certain benefits that are brought about from both the provider and the patient perspective. Let's talk a little bit, Jason, about what you've heard, what you've seen, not just anecdotally, but what you've seen by way of results of the benefits that both providers and patients are seeing due to the adoption over the past 12 months of these type of technologies.
Yeah, I mean, from a healthcare perspective, I would say probably the biggest benefit is that we're continuing to see patients in different ways, meeting consumers where their expectations are. And I think that that's why we're in healthcare, is to help people. I think if you're in healthcare for other reasons than that, there's probably not a good reason to be in healthcare. But if we focus on what's best for the person, you can't go wrong. Risk and compliance all aside, but that all aligns with what we want to do in healthcare. So the benefits are simply, you know, access. People need access to healthcare. Do I have to come into a brick and mortar building every time I need to receive care? The answer is no, you don't need to do that. We've been able to demonstrate with wide success through the pandemic that not only from a provider perspective in the traditional sense of a physician or a mid-level or even a registered dietitian, for example, but a lot of what we do in physical medicine is simply therapy. So we think about PT, we think about OT, we think about speech, we think about our psychologists all being rolled into the services that Mary Freebed provides. So distance is a barrier, whether that is someone with limited mobility in town or if they are 3 hours away, or in Michigan across, you know, the Mackinac Bridge over in the UP. It's a very rural area. So access to healthcare is real. So we want to really acknowledge that as an issue and embrace that and take action. And I think that that's one thing that has set Mary Freebed apart, is really looking at what's next. How do we engage our patients? We know a more engaged person is going to have a better outcome. So as we've been carrying this water uphill all this time, now things have plateaued a bit. So again, you know, if I'm really going to drive into the benefits, it's access to care and helping people. Those are the real world scenarios that we have for the conversations with our therapists, with our physicians, with our mid-levels, our psychologists, our dietitians, the idea of helping people and providing them access where they either have no access before or they could be 3 months out perhaps for a visit. So that's been the biggest benefit, I think, that we have experienced at Mary Freebed.
Yeah. So being sensitive to that type of adoption and the explosion that you've seen, Jason, as just a follow-up question to that, in looking at how technology is addressing, you know, needs versus wants with the providers specifically that you talked about, the PT, the OT, just kind of across the spectrum, is that something that they have embraced now to say, you know, here moving forward, this is the way we're going about it. These are the efficiencies that we're seeing. Are they more excited now to kind of take it to the next step of innovation at this point?
You know, the real world answer is it should be, but it's not as easy as we want it to be. So in the sense of, well, I really want things to go back to the way they were. And we are open for business for in-person visits. So I think really identifying with what we can do versus what we can't do, that provides us an opportunity as well. But, you know, in respect to your question about, are there some people that are really thinking about this through a different light? Absolutely. I think about some of these group sessions that we've been having from our psychology teams being able to connect with a group of people. That wasn't thought of before. And you would think psychology, for example, would be really, really easy to deliver and roll into our physician, our practices. And it's been surprisingly uphill in that sense. But since the pandemic, it's like, well, why do I have to go back to seeing somebody in person? I can just do this via telehealth. So I think that, you know, those ideas that we've been building on and integrating this into the workflow so it doesn't, you know, we reduce that stigma of one more thing. We want to make this simple. We want to make this as an extension of your practice. And this is simply another tool in your tool belt to provide patients access to care and engage in conversations. I know in some of our psychology visits, we've had, you know, really any person anywhere being able to receive these services or consume these services, if you will. We've even had some patients that have been in a car, in a garage, in a closet. I'll share that we had one patient that was in her bathtub, which provided an ethical dilemma with, do we continue treating this person in her serene place in a bathtub with water in it, or do we stop that session? So when we talk about, you know, anytime, any place, anywhere, that is real. But, you know, you take the healthcare person out of it, and the person who's receiving that care, that consumer, that patient, what are they going through? What are those needs? How do we adapt to what their expectations are and really provide that value-added service so we can continue that treatment, continue helping these people? So before I go off on a tangent, I'll kind of pause right there.
No, thank you. That definitely answers it. And then some. Thank you, Jason. So Lindy, turning over to you at Saxony, you have the benefit, the extraordinary benefit of getting to see across even different verticals and spectrums across the country here, not just in healthcare. As it relates to healthcare and the adoption that you guys are seeing, what is it that you're seeing by way of addressing the needs versus wants in what we have with technology today and what has been adopted thus far versus where you see things headed with those technologies?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, currently we, you know, working with Mary Freebed, we're seeing the use of technology prior to the clinical visit and helping determine what's the right level of care. Is this something we need to send, you know, to a provider or to a clinician? Or is this, there's some at-home things that can happen? And we're doing that via AI. And so, you know, this is relieving some of those constraints that we all know that providers have, especially in specialties and other areas and different areas of the country, that relieve some of that stress, whether it's phone calls to the nurse's station or, you know, to the providers themselves. I think, you know, when I look at benefits and when I look at benefits of technology, right, it's being able not only to deliver healthcare to consumers and patients, you know, through different types of technology, but it's also delivering the information needed to providers in different types of technology, right? Whether it's via their tablet, their smartphone, their laptop, whatever the case may be. And then more importantly, integrating their systems with the EMR into one place that they can see the entire patient history of the patients, you know, how they are doing clinically if they are away from quote unquote the four walls of the hospital or clinic. And so, you know, those technologies that I see coming about and were here, you know, quite frankly, before, you know, the health crisis, those things are really being welcomed by the providers. Now, to Jason's point, there are those guys and gals that are going to want to have everybody come back into the office and go just like it used to be. What I believe administrators are going to have to drive is that balance, right? We've now seen that we can not really look at healthcare in a completely different vertical when it comes from technology, that they are integrated with consumerism, and we are responding to those consumers like Amazon does, like, you know, any other large corporation that is providing a service to what Mark had said.
Yeah, and that brings up the great point of course, the expectation from the consumer perspective. When you say things like Amazon and, you know, the Uber Eats of the world and all that, it's, you know, what's at our doorstep today, right? Just healthcare aside, how is it that we're living today with technology, and how is that interwoven into our daily lives, and what the expectation is from really the patient side of it? So that's a great point. So Mark, in thinking about, you know, the ways in which even as an organization, you know, Cinzi has shifted, some of the things that we're hearing and seeing by way of whether it's RPM or AI or different things that we're hearing out there, to be more consumer-centric for clients and to be able to keep up with technologies and the demands that come along with that. Talk to us a little bit about how things have shifted over the past 12 months, and again, the needs versus the wants, and what it is that Cinzi is doing really as an organization to adapt to those demands.
Well, I think part of what's so interesting about what we've all been living through this last year is the technology was there. The technology was ready, and that's not always the case. Sometimes the technology comes as an innovation for need, and certainly from a scientific point of view, we're all grateful for the vaccine being innovated so quickly. But if we think about the care delivery, that technology was there. It was not necessarily being embraced, and it was not necessarily being utilized as effectively as it might be. So, I mean, Lindy, I think, rightly pointed out the data aspect. We've talked a lot about the communication aspect, but the data interchange that happens from, you know, making medical records available to patients being able to ask questions, to patients being able to make requests, the physicians and other clinicians being able to respond to those, multiple channels so that you have the conversation kind of goes where it needs, just like we all do, you know, switch from texting to somebody to pick up the phone because it's too many words to type and then go back to texting because it's more convenient. I mean, we're sort of in that kind of dialogue. And I think what's really exciting is that data collection and exchange is there. The communication and secure channel options are there. And so really people can carry on a healthcare delivery conversation very similar to the way they carry on a personal conversation or some other type of consumer service type communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of those different lines of communication and our ability as consumers to be able to adapt to those, when we start thinking about, you know, the Fitbits and what have you, let's talk about, Jason, we'll turn this over to you. Let's talk about really the adoption of whether it's wearables, whether it's the smart devices, and the expectation really from the consumer standpoint and how it is that Mary Freebed is keeping up with that expectation of things like the wearables and kind of the next level, you know, consumer approach to their own health.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think that, you know, looking at with where we're at right now, I know there's a big initiative with remote patient monitoring, RPM. There's a little bit of hesitation through the healthcare systems because these are devices that are consumer driven. Data is being collected, and where does it go? That's probably the biggest question, I think. But we also hear the stories about the Apple Watch and how it's saving lives. I mean, to be able to do a one-lead ECG in 30 seconds on your wrist, it's pretty incredible. The impact is huge. I think from the healthcare perspective, there are some questions about some false positives. Are you AFib? Are you not? Is this going to cause any unnecessary ED visits? May not lead to a hospitalization or an admission. Are they going to clog up primary care offices, cardiology with these false positives? But the fact is that these remote patient monitoring devices, they're here today, they are real. Healthcare organizations are really recognizing this as a tool. that keeps people out of the healthcare systems. So that's a good thing because it's not all about us. Yay, sick people, good for business. Let's get in preventive care here. Let's keep people out of the healthcare systems and think about different ways that we can have those touch points. So, you know, if we are to deploy a smart stethoscope, a smart blood pressure cuff, a smart scale out to a patient's home who is a diabetic, who also has hypertension, and they're at high risk for admission or readmission in some of those instances. These preventive measures, I think, are real. So being able to have staff identified to recognize with where the data is coming from those devices through a secure cloud connection back over to a system where we have real eyes on that, being able to monitor, have those interventions, those conversations with the people. I think that that's where we're going to see a big shift in really in telehealth is remote patient monitoring. I think it's going to be driven by consumers, though. I think the watches that we have of the world, I think of the these wearable devices we keep hearing more and more about with artificial intelligence, with machine learning. The technology is not going to be the limiting factor. It's how the healthcare systems embrace those technologies and how that data flows into the healthcare system, have those meaningful interactions, those conversations. So I think RPM is real. I think it's here. I think we're just, you know, at the tip of the iceberg for what this can look like in the future. I also look at other inputs and outputs, and I think about, you know, with what people's expectations are and being able to order something from Amazon and have it delivered to their house, maybe in that same day, within in 2 days, if you're an Amazon Prime member, or sooner, or maybe a little bit later, depending on where the source is. I think that the consumerization of healthcare, we want it to be an Amazon-like experience. So what are some other inputs and outputs that we can really look at that makes sense? I look at where Mary Freebed is in our hospital system, where we have the points of care with the patients. You know, we have 12, 14 days length of stay. Our patients are expected to have 3 hours of therapy every day, Monday through Friday. So that's physical therapy, that's occupational therapy, that's speech. These are people that have come through our healthcare system and are residents here, essentially. And their world's been turned upside down. Few people go to the healthcare systems and think about, yay, tell me how great I am doing today. No, they're going because an event happened and it brought them there. Whether that was a traumatic car accident, that could have been a brain injury or a spinal cord injury. You can't prevent those things from happening. Accidents happen. So when you think about somebody who's been through the wheels of the system, they've been at work and an I-beam falls and crushes their legs. It's a catastrophic event. Your life is upside down. You go to acute care, you get the level of care you need, you get sent to a quaternary partner where you're learning that, and what we do at Freebed is really that rehabilitation mechanism, taking this person from this normal with where they're at right now, transitioning them to that next normal. So if you have limited mobility all of a sudden, you want to know about consumer-driven assistive technologies that are baked into your smartphone. The Internet of Things is real in a safe and secure environment. So there's a lot of data that flows to those connection points. But if I've had a stroke and I have not only limited mobility, but maybe I need to call my nurse in the hospital, I want to use my voice to be able to do that and have a nurse call right versus pushing a button on a paddle. And having that engagement in a different way. So could we engage with voice assistant technology that are deployed in the hospital systems that would tie in with your patient engagement, with your patient education platforms, turning on the television, being able to talk to your nurse via voice or request, you know, help to go to the restroom, to the bathroom, or any of your needs. I need a glass of water. It's too loud in here. Could you have a scene set where you are lowering your window treatments or you're raising your temperature 2 degrees because you're uncomfortable? I think that the consumerism is really driving that innovation in healthcare. And we have to not only acknowledge that, but we have to adapt to those needs of the people into our experience in that healthcare system. So those are just a couple examples that I would just share, kind of broad strokes with really tangible areas that I think make a lot of sense and certainly areas that we are exploring right now.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. So Lindy, what are some of the areas to Jason's point about, again, going back to expectation, going back to points of care and the points of connection about having that Amazon type experience and what that means from a patient perspective and being able to derive the appropriate information via RPM, et cetera. What are you seeing and hearing by way of, again, that consumerism with the point of care and points of connection being, in place now with technology versus your old traditional brick and mortar? I need to go in. I need to physically be there. I need to be tested, you know, on site.
Yeah, I mean, we're hearing a lot of that. And I, you know, for the most part, I think a lot of our clients are looking for the data to make those decisions and what the best points of care are, right? Is it via chat? Is it via AI type things? Is it online? Having those resources again at their fingertips. And I think, you know, we want to, again, be able to have all that data and build that data, as everybody does, into one place, right? So that we can use that to make the right decisions, not just for that particular patient or panel of patients for that doctor, but very specific to patients' needs. I agree with Jason. I think as far as, you know, as we look at consumerism and we look at, you know, apps like MyFitnessPal or Headspace or whatever the case, I mean, you know, I get a message every morning that I don't do any meditation, which tells you I don't do it every morning. I get this message that says, hey, you need to sign on, right? And this little encouraging word. That's what we want to be able to provide as well, right? We want to provide that to our patients to say, hey, see, you haven't, you know, maybe had a lot of movement today or gotten up from bed today or walked outside the house. Again, that's all got to be enabled and approved by the patients. But that's what people are looking for. It's that accountability to their healthcare. We want to give them that those tools so that they can hold themselves accountable and feel like they have control of their healthcare and well-being.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic point, Lindy, which is the accountability to healthcare, accountability to their own health and what their role is in that health, whether it's a chronic condition or whether it's just trying to, again, meditation, something to better themselves. Clearly, there's a lot of not just the expectation, but a lot of different tools out there for consumers to put their hands on to really engage better with their health and really participate at this point. So, Mark, just shifting over a little bit to something Lindy said, which again goes back to the information, the, you know, having the data. What are some of the things you are seeing now with the wearables, with the RPM, with the data that is now provided and readily available? What are some of the things that an organization can do or should do with that data?
Well, I think part of what's interesting is we're collecting data that we had not been collecting. So some of where we're at is we don't know what we don't know yet, but we're collecting data that's going to give us insights that we've not been able to get before. So if we think just sort of from the CINSE perspective, and it's a slice of the broader care spectrum, you know, we're looking at when does a person respond to a message? What time of day? How does that map to their demographic profile? Does it map to condition elements? What do we know in terms of communication channels and what channel they may prefer or what they may choose to use at again, any kind of intersection point of demographics, conditions? So there's a sense of we've always sort of structured the care delivery from a data perspective on when is the provider available, when can the provider fit you in, what does the provider know, and now the consumer or the patient is sharing their own data directly, which may confirm what the physician was sort of intuiting or observing. It may also provide some new perspectives. So I think that's going to be really interesting. I think it also starts to empower the patient to have a better sense of what their health is, what their own data is, and maybe starts to prompt some questions that they may not have been empowered to ask before, which is only going to make that care delivery conversation, I think, richer for everybody. But ultimately, to get back to the base question, there's a lot of new data. I think there's a lot of really good work, a lot of companies out there digging into that data, analyzing it, looking for insights. And I think it's going to be really exciting over the upcoming months and years to see where those insights take us and how they start to innovate care for, you know, the patient from a self-management perspective, as well as the providers themselves.
Yeah, and that's a great point when it comes to, again, looking at not just the shared data, but empowering, right? You mentioned empowering the patient and having the accessibility to it and bringing something to the table to say, this is what I know to be true based off, you know, my own results that I have, and not just waiting to get that those tests back from a provider perspective. So interesting perspective as far as the empowerment goes. And I guess the follow-up to that, Jason, let's talk about the family caregivers and how they're now able to participate better and have a more informed kind of decision process as to where to go, who to see, and what questions to ask because of this type of data in hand from a family caregiver perspective.
Yeah, so the way that we've deployed some of our instances, we roll in with our care management team. I'll use that as an example as far as a use case where we have a patient who is getting ready to be discharged. We have caregivers, you know, as part of the transition to home. That could be a guardian, it could be a family member, it could be a spouse, it could be a loved one, it's someone. So the engagement is huge. And we know what it's like to go through the healthcare system, where when we get ready for discharge, we are nodding our heads and we are retaining as much information as we can, knowing that we're on the cusp of going home. With that said, how much information do you really remember when you get home? Are you sent home with a folder of papers that, you know, oh my gosh, I'm going to set this down. I'm so happy to be home that I don't think about it for the next 3 days, 7 days, 10 days, me as a person. To have that caregiver engaged in that care plan, working with that person who's recently been discharged, has been a huge advantage to have those touch points with the patient, just reminders through messaging, or with the voice and video interaction where we can have that relationship to continue to touch base. To be honest with you, before I joined Mary Freebed and all my days in acute care, I did not know what a physiatrist was. I had no idea. Physical medicine and rehabilitation physician. Got that drilled in. But not many people know what a physiatrist is. It's not a neurologist. It's not an oncologist. It's not a nephrologist. Not an endocrinologist. It's a physiatrist. Well, is that like psychiatry? No, it's totally different. So if you don't know what you don't know, oftentimes in healthcare, you're either you're just going to kind of roll with it or you're going to question what it is. And we also have cancellations and we have no-shows simply based on, I don't know what the value of this is. I've never heard of a physiatrist before, but you're telling me I need to come in. Well, I'm home. I'm kind of well enough. I'm going to go to see my PCP or my other specialists in that primary care medical home model. Do I need to talk to a physiatrist? And I was just there. So having that engagement with the patients, the families, the caregivers, and really articulating the value of those services is really important on that path to recovery. And I think that segues nice into what that next normal is with that person transitioning to what they're going to have to learn to adapt to in that new world. So the caregiver engagement is huge because it's not just one person. It's really that team of people that you have surrounded in that trust circle to help you and help the family to get to where you want to be, and setting goals along the way. I think the engagement is huge.
Yeah, so, and speaking of, you talk about the new normal versus the next normal, you just touched on that a bit. When you start thinking about the new normal and the expectation and, you know, AI and virtual care, some of the different things that you've talked about Mary Freebed adopting, what advice, if I could ask, what advice would you give organizations who are looking, who haven't quite taken that first step to adopting virtual care or AI or something like that, kind of start by starting, what would your advice be for organizations such as that?
My initial thought is don't be afraid of it and don't push it away. Oftentimes when we have that moment of, oh my gosh, I don't know what this is, rather than engaging in it, you push it away. I think that that's not the right approach to take because the technology is going to continue to advance. People's expectations are going to continue to go with where the market is. And I think that drilling into recognizing who our audience is in healthcare, it's people. And, you know, thinking about taking yourself out of the mix or putting yourself into the mix in this case with, what do I want my healthcare experience to be like? How can we be change makers to make that experience that we expect in healthcare and have the healthcare systems adapt to that. So then it becomes this we effort, and it's not us against the healthcare system. Well, it's convenient for me to go see my physician when it's convenient for them to have an opening for me, not when I need care. So I think that really, again, truly walking that talk of putting the person first and what you do in healthcare, that's the key to the change. So I would recommend be bold, be that change agent, see what's on the horizon. Think about what you, what your family goes through in a traditional health experience today and where it's lacking. Where are those gaps? Recognize where the gaps are and look to fill in those holes. There's a lot of data that's flowing in through medical records I look at with what's going on with the 21st CARES Act that is going to be implemented next week, this transparent data sharing expectations of patients through their portals, getting medical record information that they've never had access to before. So that is alarming, but I think it's also, you know, to the point that was mentioned earlier, it's also empowering that person to have more information at their fingertips in a tap, scroll, pinch to zoom environment, or is it a click and a mouse in a computer? So I think that, you know, the data is real, and what we do with it and how the healthcare systems really have that free flow of information, so that if I'm traveling to Florida or to Texas in these instances, can I take my health record information with me and share that with a provider? I think that that's real. And I think that that's where the shift can go in that respect.
Thank you, Jason. So Lindy, as a follow-up to that, when we start thinking about putting the patient first, being bold, how do you see that technology, regardless of what it's adopted first, whether it's virtual care, whether it's AI initiatives, in putting the patient first, how are you seeing that that is bridging a gap with whether it's age, whether it's socioeconomic factors of different sorts of an array of patients? How are you seeing that that's bridging a gap, and what is advice that you would give as far as looking to adopt these type of technologies?
That's a great question. You know, we collect a lot of data in healthcare, right? We collect, you know, how people reach us, what type of care they're accessing, what type of questions they're asking. All of that data is in the EMR, right? And other places along the way. And so when I look at, you know, how should we be reacting to that, it's really being able to use all of those data points to really drive our behaviors going forward, responding and reacting to, you know, the community and consumers. But more importantly, you know, Mark stated something, and I caught on to it because, you know, I, in my past life, worked for a company that we did, you know, we knew how a patient was communicating with us. And so if they responded to a chat, guess how we talked to them the first time? We didn't send them an email first, we sent them a chat. Right. And again, we used that data, right, that we had so that we could acquire and get the attention of that patient faster and quicker. And that's what our patients and consumers are looking for, is fast, quick, and efficient. And so the only way to individualize that is to really use the data that we've collected along the way during the patient continuum, right, in healthcare. So for me, it's really getting the data into one place, accessing to the right data elements that you're looking for, and then being able to look at, you know, AI, different vendors, different technologies that may be able to provide that to your consumers and to your patients, which the outcome of that is going to be patient engagement. It's going to be, you know, better satisfaction. And those are the things that we're all looking for to ensure, you know, success with the patient and healthcare and outcomes.
Yes, thank you, Lindy. And circling back to Mark's point in thinking about how do you customize that engagement strategy for the specific patient and some of the things that Cindy has looked at. Mark, give us your perspective on, of course, the new normal being the pandemic era and the public health emergency, and then the next normal, which is, you know, post-pandemic. Talk to us about how you see technology shifting now that we're not going back. We've all agreed that on that, and what you foresee here in the next coming years.
Well, so playing on the words that we've got on the screen in front of us, I might say the next normal is the new normal that we're in. I mean, if we think about the paradigm change we've had in the last 12 months, that's a really profound change. And Jason touched on how hard change is in general, and then specifically in healthcare. So I think it's a continuation of where we are right now, but for the betterment. So, I mean, I think we all want our individual personal lives to go back to some level of normalcy, to get back connected to some level of community with our friends and family and colleagues. But I think from a technology perspective, I might suggest that the next normal is really continuing to bear the fruits of what we've all been pressured to go through these last 12 months. So new ways of connecting via technology in our care delivery conversations, new data that's being collected as a result of the ongoing advance of technology and consumerism, trying to shift the customer service experience, if you will, in healthcare, so that the individual patient feels, not to overuse the word empowered, but also appreciated and respected, and not necessarily just a widget going through the you know assembly line of the provider's office. So I think taking where we are with data and applying it, taking the consumerism and the just the wealth of technology that's already in consumers' hands, I think there's a lot of great work ahead of folks in the next handful of years.
Yeah, and Jason, I wanna leave you with this one last question here as a perfect segue. So Mark touched on the fact that, again, not to overuse the empower, but I think there's something to be said with that patient experience and really bringing to light the information and what their new normal is and what that looks like and putting them at the center of that care. Talk to me about what you foresee. You've touched on a little bit with some of the initiatives that you have currently pending, which is AI and some really exciting things that Mary Freebed is really doing to be forward thinking. Talk to us about what your vision is or what you're seeing as the new next normal.
So if I could be, you know, personal here for a minute, there's been a project that's, you know, no matter where you go, you always take your work with you. And as I had spent a lot of years in acute care working with our primary care medical directors in ways that we could increase access to primary care, we had looked at leveraging our medical record in any way that we could. At the time, you know, we were looking at meaningful use and what those statistics were and really engaging patients to really set up a patient portal. So in a way that we were looking at increasing access to care to our primary care providers, we looked at clinical algorithms that could be treated electronically. So these would be acute conditions that a lot of people know what they have already, but certainly not something that you want to go to the ED for, or maybe not even urgent care. So we look at, you know, conditions that people have that, again, you kind of know what you have already. Do I have low back pain? A lot of people have low back pain. As an example. So, you know, as we're thinking about with what the next normal is and really leveraging the technology with where it can be, you know, we touched on voice a little bit. So I'm going to drill into that a little bit more with this particular concept and really what brought us all together here today for this conversation is we have been working on a project that we've codenamed Project Champagne for a number of months. And this is really the idea of leveraging the consumer experience with emerging technologies. So what we wanted to do is identify a handful of injury points, pain points, if you will, that a person has, but with programming through machine learning and artificial intelligence, being able to have that voice input as well as an output with that AI response. So, and for example, developing a Mary Freebed Alexa skill. So this would be, you would invoke this Alexa skill from behalf of Mary Freebed, be able to have information about access to our services, in addition to information about our services that we provide, but also really drilling into what the catalyst of the project was for. We want to help people. We want to create entry points into the system to help people. So we had drilled into 8 injury points that could be treated electronically with the voice assistant. So low back pain is real. So could we invoke a skill and say, hey, Alexa, launch Mary Freebed. Let's talk about low back pain. Where is your low back pain located? How long have you had it? Basically, some of those clinical questions and answers that we would be asking, you know, in a phone call, but just have the machine learning, that AI behind it, that could provide some direction for care. So that's really, you know, an exciting project that we've been working on very, very closely. And where I see that going is you have to start somewhere to get anywhere. So as we spotlight Project Champagne in this instance, what's next? What's beyond that? Being able to have that Amazon ecosystem experience where, what if we were able to have a consumption of healthcare in an Amazon environment, building off of the Alexa, building off of those voice assistants, being able to have a real-time voice and video interaction. Perhaps we were able to have a chatbot that lives on top of our website that would have the same programming, that artificial intelligence to those interactions to a person entering into our digital front door. So I think that that is really something that is ripe for innovation. There's a lot of thoughtful minds in the mix with us being able to execute this. And we have been thrilled to work with Saxony every step of the way and making this concept that lives up here into something tangible as far as machine learning and artificial intelligence can be a reality. And then the vision of driving voice and video to people that need that access to care would be a mechanism securely as you turn that person into a patient. So now we're in a PHI environment where we can have voice and video interactions in real time. So that's what I'm really passionate about. I'm really excited about this. And shameless plugs aside, this was a great opportunity to use this as a springboard just to share with where we believe the next normal is going to be in line with people and consumer expectations.
No, and I think, Jason, I think that sums it up nicely. I think it brings together how the delivery of care not just has shifted, but what that next normal is going to be, and something you guys are doing to be cutting edge, to get ahead of, you know, what you foresee and how to take advantage of the technologies that exist today. To Mark's point, it's not that it's necessarily always something, you know, brand new that hasn't, you know, been seen. But maybe it hasn't been adopted, or maybe it hasn't been brought together, right? Alexa clearly is not new, but the Alexa skill and being able to adapt and really implement that and integrate that within the health system is something very cutting edge and exciting. So anxious to hear more about that, but thank you for sharing that, Jason. So by the look at the time here, Lindy, Mark, Jason, again, can't thank you enough for the wealth of information and insights today. We really do appreciate all the time you guys have shared with us today. Visit Cinzi.com to learn more or sign up for a custom demo if you have that want or need. And of course, thank you again. This concludes our panel discussion on innovation and delivery of patient care. And thank you so much, all three of you, for your time and attention this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.